The children grow and develop until they have reached the average age of 25 to 30 years. On the astral plane, animals, too, are cared for by either their owners who have died or people who love animals. Just as the physical universe is rich with planets, many of which are no doubt inhabited by physical life, there are many astral planets comprising what is called the astral plane or astral dimension, where most people on Earth awaken after they die. Richard Francis Burton, writer and world traveler, and part of Time's Dreamer TMS team, has been busy since his death in 1890. He is charting the world where Time's Dream is located, and says that a large river, the River of Eternity, runs through the entire planet, like a snake biting its own tail. Clustered along the river are communities of people bonded together by ideas of culture, religion, and race. American Indians, who once lived on the Great Plains, still live in teepees. Here are the happy hunting grounds of which the Indians speak. Communities of Catholics, Muslims, Hindus, Christians, Jews, Christian Scientists, all live according to the faith they espoused. On this plane, the old proverb holds true, birds of a feather flock together. In a sense, heaven is what you believe it is. And that is the point. Heaven is a dream world. It's what you believe it is. However, it is as real to all the people who live there as our world is to us. There is also growth in the astral world. Once a person is able to break through the idea boundaries, a new type of existence is possible. The astral plane is vast. Swegen Salter says that approximately 60 billion humanoids gather here from all existing worlds. Our spirit friends tell us, we eat and drink like you do. Our nourishment is synthetic, that is, we materialize earthly food, so to speak. The meat, which some people still like, is only a reproduction of real matter. No animal has to die for another living being. Still, one's personality and character do not change by dying. Nor does one become all-knowing. To assume that our spirit colleagues at Time's Dream have all the answers would be a mistake. They can only report the environment where they live. They have not seen God from the third plane. But they do know that there are higher planes and that it is possible for the more spiritually advanced to visit or move to those planes. Our spirit friends do acknowledge what all world religions have said through the ages: the totality of existence is understood only by the cosmic source, or God, or Atman, or Brahman. Dying does not make you omniscient. There are yet higher mysteries to understand. Also, if you believe that dying will save you from your emotional problems, you'll probably find the problem still there. It seems that Earth is the best place to work out problems and situations. On the astral plane, you create your reality, but it is a dream world. You may theorize many things and mentally change things instantly. On the astral plane, if you try to murder someone, you would find that you couldn't, no matter how hard you tried, since the spirit does not die. However, on Earth, if you murder someone, that person would be physically dead and you would have to face the consequences of your act. A life and its destiny pattern would be disrupted, as would the lives of the victim's friends and loved ones. In other words, Earth teaches you hard lessons and it is literally the school of hard knocks. It confronts you with your actions and the consequences of your actions. It tests you as to what you really believe in. The length of time people live on the astral plane spans a few weeks to hundreds of years. Then, if there is more to learn, they reincarnate, accept another body, on Earth, or perhaps on another inhabited planet. If they have learned everything they needed to learn, they will move up into a higher plane, or higher state of consciousness, for that is what the planes really are, states of consciousness. Project Director Swegen Salter describes the third plane's environment. The River of Eternity stretches out approximately 100 million kilometers. Along its banks live those who were once living on Earth. Vegetation varies from algae to mammoth trees. Many buildings are made of wood. Some people or animals wake up here born anew. Others come to us as old people and turn young again after the regenerating sleep. Why there are such differences, we do not know. Animals will be of an age of vitality and well-being. Damaged tissue or broken bones regenerate just like a wound healing in your world, perfectly. Lost limbs will regrow. The blind will see again. The color of your hair and skin cannot be changed and will be the same as it was during your earth life. Here in the river world, beings arrive from all levels of life. Swegen Salter and her life companion, Sir Richard Francis Burton, speak of taking exploratory trips along the river in Burton's ship, Thracker, and seeing snowy white polar caps, fog along the river, blue skies, and tree-covered hills at the foot of high mountains. In the land of the dead are skyscrapers, and homes that range from thatch-roofed houses to magnificent palaces with glass towers and roofs of gold. Any kind of housing the mind can conceive is here, for in this world of energy these are mental creations. The dream houses we dream of owning. Swegen Salter says she was 38 when she died in an accident. Death came suddenly and she was not prepared. She awoke on a recliner in a cheerfully decorated room that she'd never seen before. She was greeted by Sir Richard Francis Burton, who was to become her close companion. Later, she joined him in his exploration of the astral plane. She felt very happy in this new dimension, but it was still not easy to adapt to a new life when she was torn away from a life of responsibilities on her home planet. Her planet, Vrid, was more advanced than Earth in its knowledge of life after death, and while she knew about the continuation of life, it was still an intellectual concept. She compared her death and rebirth to moving to a foreign country, which is very nice, but adjustments to the new living conditions must be made. She discovered that on the third plane of the astral world, it is more difficult to avoid spiritual laws. As she says, if you harbor bad intentions and thoughts, you will not be here very long. She explained that negative thoughts and attitudes immediately attract you to lower planes where people are still acting out their private dramas of lust, greed and selfishness. In this world, you can't ignore feelings and inclinations, nor can you suppress your wishes. If you have certain deeply felt earthly desires, you will have to return to Earth to fulfill them. Deceased researcher, Konstantin Rodive, remarks that he found his true self on the third level of consciousness. On Earth he had tried to be something else than he was, as do most people on Earth. Today, he said happily, in this world, I can acknowledge my own true self. In essence, the astral plane is not the ultimate end of being. It is an interim place. Here, people can experience a heavenly refuge, patterned after what they have believed heaven would be like. They live here for a time and then either move up into a higher plane of consciousness or they return to Earth to learn new lessons, new concepts, to try out a life of which they've only dreamed. Some of the spirit research colleagues have already reincarnated back to Earth to continue working on the transcommunication project from this side. Not everyone qualifies for life on the astral plane when they die. Those who rejected the idea of life after death or never thought much about it may find themselves reincarnating very quickly. Also, if they suppressed their feelings, desires and talents, and led a material life that only served material aims, they will probably find themselves back on Earth again. For example, a man who only thinks of making money or playing golf finds little satisfaction on the astral plane. As this is a plane of dreams where people create their own realities, they are the star actors in their self-created script. While this sounds heavenly, it can get boring after a while. The trouble is that if money is one's aim, one is immediately surrounded by it and there is no competition in getting it. Think of it and it's there. Nor is there any competition for the golfer. He or she can have a hole in one every day, and play a perfect game every time. On the other hand, artists, philosophers, musicians, and scientists appreciate the chance to create their inventions in a peaceful world without the burdensome necessity of having to make a living and support a family. Consequently, they may choose to live on the astral plane for some time. The astral plane is a plane of consciousness. Many people will find a temporary reward for their lives, but it is not permanent. There are higher worlds, higher dimensions, and above all, there is the world of the Creator. To reach that exalted plane takes the most committed of souls, and Suijin Salter says that those who reach that highest of planes are never seen again. Two children on the third plane. A boy WHO loved fireworks and Jorgen WHO was murdered. It was every parent's worst nightmare come true. The Brown's 8-year-old boy, Ezra, had been sick of a cold and fever that turned out to be much more serious. When all the tests were over, the doctors called the Browns in. "Your boy has leukemia," they said. Then came the shock, the tears of denial, the stubborn refusal to accept the worst, the prayers and the fierce struggle to help Ezra overcome the wasting disease overtaking his body. The Browns did everything within their power to save him. They had been missionaries. They called upon God to save their son. After all, hadn't they given their lives for God? But the boy grew weaker and increasingly pale. He managed to live another 4 years and 4 months. Then early one morning, he crawled into their bed and cried heartbreakingly. He knew he was going to die. They all knew it. The Browns held him tightly, as if by holding him, they could keep his precious spirit pulsating in his beating heart, as if they could keep him alive by will alone. The boy had grown old and wise in his illness. He looked like a weary, little old man. He was ready to go, he told his parents, who knew now that no matter what they did, it was time to say goodbye. But what was there to say? As the boy's father clasped him, he remembered how often Ezra had persuaded his parents to watch all the TV shows broadcast from Germany and Luxembourg on instrumental transcommunication. Abruptly, Ezra blurted that he would try to contact them on recording tapes later on. His father nodded and Ezra stopped crying. He died 9 days later, on September 20, 1986. He was 12 years old. His mother now keeps a poem that Ezra had written when he was 8 years old. "If I could only plug in a magic hat, I could become an astronaut. I would fly to the moon to look at everything, then I would walk to the stars and to the sun. I would love to walk across the sky and sleep on clouds." In December 1986, Ezra's parents were experimenting with a tape recorder when they heard an unknown voice on the tape, saying, "Ezra is waiting." A little later, another voice said, "I have long hair." To the Browns, this was a very evidential contact, for Ezra had been undergoing chemotherapy and had lost all his hair 4 times. They reported the contact to Maggie at Settle, who recorded the message in her journal. By this time Settle had already collected thousands of voices on tapes. Bits and pieces of people's lives and afterlives. Some of them would fit into a solved puzzle and others would just remain scraps of unused information. Some time later, Maggie received a letter from Salter. "I know Ezra. He joined a Chinese group. He is sending greetings to his parents. He asks you to tell them that he has a head full of beautiful hair again. He has a punch on for fireworks. The Chinese people here organize occasional beautiful fireworks which anyone can watch. Ezra plays an important part in it. He would like his parents to know that he is not the boy who died of cancer anymore. He has grown into a fine young man who is now in his 20s. Maggie contacted Ezra's parents and she received a letter back from Ezra's parents recounting the events leading up to his death in 1986 and his chemotherapy. Now, the tape with Ezra's remarks about having a full head of hair was an important piece of a puzzle that was beginning to come together. In September 1990, Maggie received more information about Ezra. Salter said, "Ezra loves fireworks and takes an active part in it. We recently were observing such fireworks together. Then, right before New Year's Day, December 31, 1992, Maggie was getting ready for a small New Year's celebration party at home. The phone rang. It was Salter. She said she was working on a computerized picture transmission which she plans to send to Settle. "If everything goes well," she said, "you will find 2 pictures combined into one. One picture shows Ezra Braun. The other one is for yourself and is something to cheer you up. See plates 16 and 17, curious, Maggie started the scanning program. The pictures had already been stored as a file in the computer. Accessing the file, she saw a picture of a happy, dark-haired boy, shown from the waist up, standing in front of a tree in bloom, smiling, his arm raised. Over his shoulder was a heavy strap with a buckle. Maggie thought wistfully that the blooming tree in the spirit world looked so beautiful, considering the cold, bleak weather in Luxembourg. Also in that fill was a picture of Maggie's own horse, who had died. She almost wept, realizing Salter had sent the picture of her horse, alive on the other side, as a gift for her. She also knew Salter had sent it to her so that people would know that our animal friends also continue life in spirit. A few minutes later, Salter checked in again by phone. Tell me if everything arrived well. Unfortunately, I can't check from here if our experiment succeeded. It took a lot of work to send those pictures. Maggie confirmed that the picture transmission had succeeded and she said, I see that Ezra wears a strap across one shoulder. Also you picked a beautiful tree as a background. Salter replied, the strap belongs to the bag that he always carries around with him. Remember, I once told you that he is very interested in the work of Paracelsus I, who is teaching Ezra about natural healing with plants and herbs. As far as I know, Ezra collects these and saves them in his bag. Paracelsus is thrilled by the variety of herbs he finds. His zeal of collecting is infectious. He inspires the young people. He hopes to work out methods of healing which he can pass along to you. The tree is a cherry tree in full bloom. One Swedish refers to Paracelsus, 1490-1541, a physician and alchemist, who is very interested in teaching his healing methods to young people and older physicians, too. He is still living on the astral plane and Swedish says he is learning to use the computer. Salter chuckled, continuing, Ezra is Paracelsus' assistant, but whenever he really needs him, the boy is hard to find. The young people tease Paracelsus as much as he teases them. There is a lot of horseplay that goes on. When you pass on the news to Ezra's parents, give them my greetings. See plate 18, she added, you will hear from me again, soon. Then she wished Maggie a happy new year and said, although the New Year's celebration has lost its meaning for us, many people here still celebrate it along with you in memory of their life on Earth. Similarly, other messages from Time Stream have indicated that like New Year's, people in spirit enjoy celebrating birthdays and other special occasions with their families on Earth. Maggie closed the contact with Salter, genuinely grateful for her friend in another dimension. When the clock struck 12 and Maggie's neighbors were celebrating, she abruptly thought of Ezra and the others at Time Stream sharing the celebration in their invisible dimension. She smiled, printing out a copy of the scanned picture of Ezra in the computer and sent it to the Browns along with Salter's message. Maggie received back an excited letter from the Browns that further added to the mosaic of the boy Ezra. Ezra's parents said that even though Ezra had grown, they still recognized his infectious smile and there was no doubt the picture was of their son. His father filled in more information about the mosaic of Ezra Braun. You did not know our connections to China. I was required to stay in Beijing for 2.5 months and was allowed to take my family with me for 3 weeks, in spite of medical warning for Ezra. We took him along because of his persistent begging. He always dreamed of taking a walk on the Great Wall of China. When my wife and the children had to fly back on August 21st, he cried and said, I would like to stay in China forever. A broken bar. We were amused by your mention of fireworks. Nothing gave Ezra as much pleasure as setting off firecrackers. Only 6 weeks before his death he arranged, with the help of his friends, a wild and noisy display on the roof terrace and the burning of little paper boats on the water surface. Then he added a note about the strap on Ezra's shoulder. This strap is part of a shoulder bag used by Chinese students until the middle of the 80s and beyond. During his visit in Beijing, Ezra saw such a shoulder bag carried by his Chinese companion. Upon return he wanted one himself. His wish was fulfilled. The bag accompanied him until his death and served as a container for all his little treasures and secrets. We still have the bag and it still contains almost everything he carried around during the last part of his life. In July of 1993, Maggie received more information about Ezra. Salter sent a report that he was now studying medicine within the medical group of Time Stream. He has established a special connection to the Chinese physician Yang Fuds, who joined us only a short time ago. Ezra has learned much from this physician. Yang Fuds has an excellent understanding of body, mind, and matter. Further information came through on the computer about Yang Fuds, written in Chinese characters, by Yang Fuds himself, even though the computer didn't have a program to use Chinese characters. The Chinese physician claimed to have lived under the rule of Shun Ti in the capital of Yolang in the years 150-200 AD. Maggie explained, "Our PC, although capable of almost 50 types of writing, cannot type out Chinese letters. With the help of a code sent to the lab for research purposes, Maggie was able to transfer an answer to Yang Fuds from their computer's Western alphabet into Chinese. She didn't know if the Chinese symbols would give the same meaning as a correct Chinese letter written by a Chinese language expert. However, the spirit side mentor, the technician, assured Maggie that Yang Fuds would understand the writing, although it would not be good enough for an expert. Ezra's story reveals a life of growth and learning on the third plane. He died as a boy and now on the third plane is a young man learning Chinese medicine. He is living with a group of Chinese people, in a culture he very much admired. He is happy and his Earth experience now seems only a dream. Again, the point Time Stream stresses is that we are all eternal creatures and each incarnation experience we have is only an infinitesimal part of our eternal life. Ezra's parents feel specially blessed to have had this transcommunication experience with their son. The parents wrote to Maggie, "We are aware that few people can be given such a present. We feel obliged to let those in similar situations know about it. Perhaps they can handle the loss of their loved ones better and learn to live with it." However, to Ezra's parents, the experience was a heartbreak. They still felt the grief and loss of their son, but, on the other hand, they knew he was alive and even happy. It, of course, is hard to accept that they were only part of his Earth's dream and a very short dream at that. But they know, too, that they will see Ezra again. And it will be a very happy reunion. Maggie was soon to be involved in another communication between a mother and her child. During an ITC conference in Oersdorfen, Germany, on May 26, 1991, a woman handed Maggie a letter but asked her not to open it until the end of the conference. When Maggie returned home, she remembered the letter and opened it. The letter was signed by a group of women ITC experimenters who asked her to contact Suijin Salter in the hopes that Salter would search for a small boy on the third plane who had been brutally murdered. The boy's name was Jürgen Marcel. His mother couldn't stop grieving and they felt it would help her if she could achieve some kind of contact with her boy. Maggie, a school teacher, and her husband Jules, a civil servant, both had to return to work the next day. Maggie, feeling the mother's pain, planned to write a long letter on her Commodore C64 computer to Salter. Before she had time to write that letter, a message about little Jürgen came through on the computer from no less an illustrious person than Thomas of Canterbury, whose life dates had been 1120 to 1170. The message had come from Station Central, another spirit sound lab on the third plane. Spirits are telepathic, they can read one's thoughts, particularly if there is a strong emotional field connected to the thought. The message came through on Maggie's computer, addressed to Jürgen's mother in Middle English. Translated, it read, "Mother Lieselgund, you saw your child killed and yet your little Jürgen Marcel lives now, I assure you. There is no doubt. Certainly, a horrible murder. There is no use denying it. Now weep no more. Take comfort with right good cheer. There is a better life in another place. This instrument, this Mesa, although it has mistakes, still we have good hope to build it and then we shall test it. Believe this as strongly as you have faith. And to researchers, I advise you to be in harmony, accord, with your opponents and to have peace with them. The descent begins by another man and, whereas the reconciliation begins by yourself, I do not say that you shall run after your opponents for the sake of peace but that they shall be driven to it. Now friends of Settle, eat your meal and I wish you all the best I can think of. Thomas. A few days after receiving the message from Thomas, Maggie spoke with Salter about Jorgen Marcel. Salter described the boy as a friendly little boy with curly blonde hair and said, the poor child had suffered many knife wounds on his head before he arrived here. Maggie had forgotten that new arrivals still carry their wounds when they get there. Who takes care of Jorgen Marcel? She asked curiously. What happens to the wounded? Jorgen, Salter answered, is in the care of Marie Mretjes, a grandmother. She treats his wounds and takes good care of him, as if he were her own child. The boy has forgotten what happened to him and plays happily with other children. But how was he healed? Maggie asked. Salter described the healing process. When wounded children and grown-ups arrive here they are bedded in tubs filled with healing waters. It is no easy work. The wounds have to be treated and their body has to be washed. Amputated limbs regrow within a short time and the sick tissue regenerates itself. Marie does all this work. She is a very resolute woman and has much help. Salter added that many people on the third plane join in on the healing work. Everybody on the third plane has a task and working with the healing waters is one of these tasks. Maggie contacted Jorgen's mother, who confirmed that her son indeed had curly blonde hair and was friendly toward everyone, perhaps excessively. She burst into tears, saying that she had held her murdered boy in her arms, had seen the terrible stab wounds on his head. She said it helped her a great deal to know that Jorgen was alive and had forgotten the horrible event. Later, Salter contacted Maggie by phone, and Maggie heard the happy voices of many children playing, laughing, and singing, though some cried as adult voices tried to soothe them. Maggie asked, "Where are you?" Salter answered, "I am bringing this communication from the children's home of Marie Mretjes. There are many such homes here in which children are looked after. Little babies are here, too. Many women and men are constantly taking care of the children. New children may be arriving at any time. Of course, not all of them are taken care of here." It was hard to understand Salter because the children were so noisy. The voices of men and women were also heard in the background, loudly at times. Evidently, Time Stream's voice modulating devices were working too well. For those women and men who were unable to have children on Earth, they are now able to be surrounded by children. And there is no shortage of children arriving. To Jules and Maggie, bringing the messages of children to their parents is the most rewarding part of their work. As Jules said thoughtfully, a few days ago, I asked myself, why are you doing all this? You have a good job, no problems. You could lead a carefree life. Travel, be socially active and enjoy a life. Instead, you sit at a desk every free minute, you work weekends and Sundays. You have no holidays and no vacation. And why? To be called weird, crazy or perhaps even a swindler or cheat. Is that what you really want? Then I glanced at the front page of this issue, the Settle newsletter, with the smiling face of Ezra Braun. Thinking about my conversation with his father, I knew that I was going to continue this work with all available means and strength. I would never get tired of passing along what was given to me, the message of eternal life and survival of personality and spirit. To Jules, the endless conferences, the bickering of scientists, both pro and con, the constant need to document their research, the endless patience, the long sleepless hours, the people who know nothing of their research and who doubt instrumental transcommunication, do not make his life easy. But the child dreamer, they make it all worthwhile. Three forever sweethearts. Jeanette and George Meek are lovers. WHO wait for each other. George Meek had always congratulated himself about his genuinely happy marriage. His wife Jeanette had not only been his sweetheart, but she'd shared his interest in psychology and parapsychology. George had done very well over the years as an international engineering consultant and Theatium D. lived very comfortably. But now, She'd had a series of strokes and they both knew she was going to die. He understood death was only a transition into another life. But it was going to be very hard to be separated from her. Suddenly, the time he'd been with her seemed so incredibly short.